Hello, hello, and welcome back to a massive Relatively Football Sunday on the Whistle weekend summary episode. It has been chaos in the Women's Super League. It's been a big Sunday. Everyone is all over the place, and I'm here, as always, with my sister, Flo, all the way from London. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Surviving and thriving after that. What a weekend. I feel like, you know, very normal result on the Saturday, easing into Sunday. You know, you're expecting the big names to all get their wins on the board. And, you know, first two games of the Sunday just did not happen. Chaos all before the kind of big head-to-head clash of Man City, Arsenal with the late kickoff. Yeah, can you think of any other kind of big weekends like this off memory in the Women's Super League? This many upsets? One for the books.
Yeah, I think all in one day, certainly a memorable one to have these many upsets on one day, to have such a big impact like that. I mean, there's those big Chelsea City games, which in recent years have always been a bit of a classic, where they've just so many goals in quick succession. But yeah, it was a bit of a classic today.
Yeah, I need to go get an ice pack, cool myself down. But while I do that, we'll get straight to the games. We did kick off. It has been a big Sunday, but there was a game yesterday, Flo, in the WSL, a really tight game at the bottom, which had a couple of teams moving around, as you said on Twitter. Villa got the weekend off with a win, 1-0 at home over Spurs. And what a goal from Mana Iwabuchi. A big result here for Marcus Bignot and the Gemma Davies kind of brain trust, the new at the top of the new Aston Villa management team. Tough one for Rianne Skinner, two losses in a row now for her. Obviously can't blame her for losing at Chelsea last week, but you probably thought Spurs were going to get more out of this one going into it, didn't you, Flo?
Yeah, I was really surprised, to be honest, that they didn't get a point, but it's the same frailties that Spurs keep being exposed with, which is their lack of finishers in this team, their lack of firepower up front. It's all well and good having loads of possession and having odd shots that work the goalkeeper, but they're just so bad at scoring goals. And I know, I think Tim Stillman talked about this on WSL podcast, about the Offside Rule WSL podcast, about the fact that he was really surprised that Spurs didn't go in for any loan moves up front for the window, or didn't manage to secure any. And yeah, looking at their team, especially with Alex Morgan leaving, you just think, who is getting the goals? Because there's so much reliance on Alana Kennedy to do so much work. They had some really good chances against Chelsea, Percival and Quick Graham especially, but they're just relying on midfielders, really. They've just got such lack of upfront power.
I think that's a fair point, and you know, the stats will back it up, the flow of the game, the eye test will back it up. But I do think watching this game, for me, it wasn't even necessarily a personnel thing. It was more of an emotional thing, a spiritual thing. Like, I didn't see any Spurs players taking shots. I didn't see any Spurs players running into positions where they could take shots. I think it was a total lack from any creativity in the midfield to the forwards themselves to actually desire to score. And I think maybe that's more on the manager for me than the personnel. I think they weren't set up to try and create chances, to try and rush into kind of penetrative positions. And I think on the flip side, credit has to go to Marcus Bignot and Gemma Davies on the Villa side. Villa were playing very weird formation, tough conditions. It was really cold out there. And they played this kind of 6-1-3, which I've almost never seen before. And I posted a thing on Twitter kind of highlighting, you could see when they didn't have the ball, where the players were. And it was kind of amazing how many players Villa had back. And I think you talk about Spurs not having the personnel, but I think a lot of teams would struggle to break down the defense that Villa had. And I don't think Rianne Skinner knew what to do with it. So, you know, I think players like Kit Graham and Percival were actually two of Spurs' better players. Maybe you need a bit more from Kennedy and Cho, and you definitely need a lot more from Rosetta Ayan. But yeah, I don't know. Something about the way this game went, I thought Spurs offered very little, especially once the second half, the last 30 minutes. I thought it really, Villa closed this game out beautifully well. Do have to, what's the opposite of a shout out, Flo? Do have to give a kind of a shout in, a bit of criticism? What would you call that? Call out? I got to call out the ref.
Yeah.
Emily Sims had a really poor game. Should have sent Mikkelsen off the Spurs goalie.
Yes, that's true. And that would have completely changed the game.
Exactly. So I think it was a fair result in that respect. And the game late on really descended into a bit of chaos. Poor reffing, lots of fouls. She completely lost her handle on the game. Lots of players going down with injuries, lots of careless errors that I think endangered some of the players. So I think it was another game where Villa really ground out this result. And I think we saw where some of that WSL reffing is still a problem in this league. And maybe we'll get to that with some of the other stuff going on in the Man City-Arsenal game and the Chelsea-Brighton game, where I know a lot of people on Twitter are upset. But I think this game was, you know, the best piece of quality, the best player on the pitch won it for Villa. And apart from that, it was all about effort and tenacity to try and get the result. Moving on to the Sunday games, Flo, here we are. Boom. 6 a.m. my time, noon in England. I'm not even awake yet. And Reading are at home at the Lee Valley. They're getting a result over Manchester United. 2-0, goals from Tash Harding, Dan Cutter. I definitely did not see this one coming in the battle of the two most pressing teams in the WSL.
Yeah, I didn't see this coming, to be honest. But United have that way that they always do in most games, apart from maybe when they're playing a sort of Brighton sort of team, where they are just going to dominate the whole game. But against Reading and teams like Reading, they are quite happy to let the team have a bit of the ball. And even though the other team might create some chances, you're always pretty sure that United will come out as the winners of that situation. And Reading had some early chances. Rachel Rowe had a really good chance. I can't remember who had another chance a few minutes later, then just didn't quite make connection. It might have been Emma Mitchell, I can't remember. So there were signs of it early on for Reading, but you just thought, I mean, this is kind of what happens against United. They don't mind if they're not going to dominate everything, but they are very effective with what they have.
They're waiting for a sniff of an error, yeah, and are capitalising.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're waiting for the space to open up that they can exploit down both channels. And Reading were just really good at cutting off those options. They never really let United get much space, and United defended the set pieces, both goals from set pieces, really badly.
The second one especially, I thought, stood out as really poor.
Yeah, and there were moments, I mean, I think Mary Earps has a tendency, I think, at corners anyway, to not handle the pressure well in those moments. She's never been the best goalkeeper, I think, at sort of coming out and claiming balls when maybe she should. I don't know if that's behind some of the reasoning that she's been absent from the recent England squads, but that is definitely where she's lacking in her game a little bit. And yeah, certainly for the first goal, the Tash Harding header, I think she could have done better. And I wonder how much of a difference Torres' daughter playing instead of Kirsty Smith had today. I tried to find out what was wrong with Kirsty Smith. She wasn't in the squad, so I imagine it's an injury. I didn't see the quotes from Casey Stoney's pre-match presser, and the Man United website didn't do a preview, but I presume that's why she wasn't in the squad. So chucking Torres' daughter in, who is a centre-back but is being played at right-back, with such a slick and secure back four who, bar the goal at Chelsea a few weeks ago, have been pretty consistent and not really made a mistake. I don't know how much that might have to do with it. The kind, you know, a defensive unit that's been really tight. And then when you mix that up, and we'll come on to the Chelsea game where I think it was a similar issue there, goalie and centre-back wise, then it just, it was really bad. I mean, it was like the Chelsea goal, but times two, not being able to deal with a fairly simple ball into the box. And Reading are really good at set pieces. They are set piece
specialists. Yeah, we said that a lot this season. I think this is, it's a perfect game script for Reading. You know, United want to capitalise on their errors so you don't make mistakes. And then you take these fine margins and you get the set pieces. Kind of not, I think you've got to give Reading the credit there, but just focusing on United a little bit more, like, do you think they underestimated Reading, or did you get the feeling from the get watching the game that you felt like they just thought the chance was going to come and it didn't? Like Kristen Press, Jackie Cronin comes off the bench. Like, were you expecting a spark from United and it kind of, it just never came? Or do you think they could have done more? Or do you think really Reading just never gave them a sniff?
I think the setup from Reading was perfect. So I want to give Reading quite a lot of credit. I think where Man United lacked was having a second plan basically. I don't think Stoney was fantastic with her changes. And I don't think they adapted to the sort of resistance that they came up against and thought, okay, because so many teams against United this season have not lined up like they should have to be able to kind of defend or cause problems. Whereas what Reading did, they were very smart, and Casey Stoney didn't really have an answer for that. She kind of just stubbornly kept going and took Katie Zellum off, I think, with 20 minutes to go, which I thought was a bit of a mistake. And by Reading setting up with their four in midfield, United were just constantly overloaded, and Reading were just, yeah, really, really smart with what they did. And I think, yeah, not having Tobin Heath and Lauren James is a massive loss. And it is also, I think, quite concerning how many injuries Lauren James is picking up. And I know Stoney noted that in her pre-match press conference, because I saw some quotes that Emma Saunders shared about how they're now going to leave Lauren James's recovery a tad longer because she isn't recovering from injuries very well. Like, she's getting a new injury quite quickly, so they're going to extend that recovery time. But that, I think, is quite concerning. Such an exciting young player, but at this age, she shouldn't be picking up that many injuries so soon. So there's just a couple of things that I don't know if this is signs now of some frailties within the United team. And next season, given who knows what's going to happen with Preston Heath, you know, are we going to see this same United that we saw sort of up to this point, really? Or is this now a kind of reversal back to perhaps realistically where they are? I don't know if I'm sort of overdoing it in terms of a, like, I'm not saying that it's like they're frauds, but I just think...
Frauds. There you go. Flo's calling them frauds.
They need a plan B.
Well, and they've maybe lost that with Lauren James, was kind of, you know, against Chelsea a few weeks ago. We saw her come off the bench and do that Sigsworth.
Yeah, and not having that firepower. I mean, their bench still looked quite good. But it wasn't, I mean, no one on the bench was someone was going to be a game changer. They were solid players that you'd probably look to bring on when you're trying to defend a lead, not someone that you're going to send on and say, you know, do your thing. So yeah, just smart football from Reading, I think.
Reading win the battle of the pressing teams, notably away from home. Classic, kind of really beating Man United at their own game there. And Flo, I was ready to pack in Man United's title chase the minute this game finished. But then we go down to King's Meadow. Sam Kerr scores a header from a corner, top corner, off the bar and in. Chelsea are 1-0 up. We're only 5 minutes gone. And you just think, okay, Chelsea are pretty much walking on their way to the title. Man United are gone. It's just Chelsea and Man City now. And then, you know, the impossible happens. Eileen Whelan scores her very own corner, getting in front of Beth England at the other end. And then with just 12 minutes to play, Carly Telford really struggles with a corner kick coming in from Megan Colony and kind of punches it into her own net. Really important to note here, listener, right before this winning goal for Brighton, incredible moment happening when Brighton beat Chelsea in this winning goal. But before it went in, Koivisto and Kagman had done an incredible 1-2 and played in Lee, who then had this shot that was deflected that won the corner. And Lee's going into the six-yard box to take up her position as a striker for the box. And then Hope Powell removes Lee for Rhianna Jarrett. And Rhianna Jarrett sticks herself, a little bit of dark arts, sticks herself right on Carly Telford. And then as the ball comes in, this winning goal from the corner, Telford can't deal with Rhianna Jarrett, who's standing right in front of her. And that's how the error comes from the goalie. So you kind of see this amazing moment where Hope Powell makes this change. And obviously, you know, here we are. Making history, records smashed, obliterated, turned into pieces. 33 games unbeaten, number 34, Brighton and Hope Powell come there. Flo, what are you feeling? I'm chuffed.
I think I found, I certainly found this one more shocking than United one.
Unbelievably shocking.
That's for sure, because if Chelsea were going to lose this season, I didn't see it coming against any team that wasn't part of the top four.
Context, this is the worst attacking team in the WSL versus the best defensive team in the WSL. Albeit, they rested Anne-Catherine Berger and Millie Bright was missing as well.
Yeah, the absence of Carly Telford and Millie Bright certainly for both goals, I think, played a part, because like we said with United, that core stability that has been the bedrock of their WSL season, yeah, they've rotated a bit in cup games already, but in the WSL, you know, they've been pretty set with the team that they've played. And Carly Telford hasn't played a lot of football over the last sort of year and a half. She's been Chelsea's number two for a while now, and only filling in cup games and other sort of odd fixtures. So she's out of form. She's out of game experience. And then Millie Bright, who, as much as I think she has the odd brain fart from time to time, and I'm not a massive fan of her and Steph Horton as a duo.
She's had a great season.
She's had a very good season, and she's very solid. She's good at what she does. And also, she, you know, she's big and she's strong. And I think the communication thing is what really would have hurt them, especially
yeah, totally
from,
right.
from corners. That, you know, Carly Telford having not been around them a whole lot, and Sophie Ingle, defensive midfielder, playing at centre-back, which she has already done this season and filled in, I think, in a Conti Cup game. But it's not her, you know, her best position. And also, she's quite a small player. She's not that big. She's short and quite, you know, slight. And I can imagine in the box, you know, she's probably quite easily, you know, like, overcome physically. So I just think there were signs, if for Brighton fans perhaps, of how this might happen. But given Brighton's run up to this point, I mean, even the most diehard Brighton fan must have not seen that coming. A point, I think, would have been good. But it's also signs of the Chelsea of the past, where we have seen them struggle to finish chances, and everyone thought that this season was different, that the Chelsea of kind of maybe 2 years ago now, that really was struggling to put away chances against Arsenal, against City in big games, that you know, those shackles had been thrown off now, because they were relentless. They were just, you're punishing teams. And today they really struggled. They were getting really frustrated. They had 30 shots. I think that must be a record this season.
No, only 7 on target though, Fly. I do want to actually for Brighton a little bit, because I don't think Chelsea did create that many chances, especially from open play, in my opinion.
Yeah, but they
there was a lot of hitting and hope. There was a lot of hitting and hoping. Harder had one off the bar. Harder had one off the post. England had one off the bar. Apart from that, the only chances Chelsea created were from corners.
But they
That's
had,
my opinion.
Yeah, but they had all the ball. They had like 70% possession.
Yeah, but I think if you watch this game, it's a really interesting one in that and I think part of it is what you're saying about squad rotation. Emma Hayes got bowled in the 55th minute. She brings on G, Kirby and Pernille Harder. She obviously maybe regrets starting Jessie Fleming, you know, and...
Well, this is
Beth
the thing.
England.
I think Emma Hayes has a lot to take responsibility for, because the lineup had the approach of a game that she didn't think they were going to lose. She didn't think they had much chance of losing, because she approached the game like she would approach a cup game or
a
Conti Cup group stage.
I'm a big believer this Chelsea side is one of the greatest sides. So I would argue that team should still be able to beat Brighton. And I think it's a credit to the way Brighton played and Hope Howe that they saw the foot off the gas a little bit from Emma Hayes and they took advantage of it. But that Chelsea team is still good enough to beat Brighton.
Yes, but I think Hayes herself has spoken a lot about momentum, and I know why she's done it. It's because they're playing Arsenal on Wednesday night, and she wants to make sure for that game she had the best team possible, injuries aside, but in more of the rotation. Katrin Berger wasn't even on the bench, so I imagine that's more than just a bit of rotation. Millie Bright has had issues before with injuries, so I imagine I don't know if she's got something or that was you know, precautionary to make sure she was ready for next week. So I get it. But at the same time, this is all about momentum. You know, Joe Montemurro spent half the season talking about rhythm, and Chelsea have that rhythm right now. So I understand that there's probably signs within the squad that there was no massive opportunity to rotate and it would have been helpful. You can't replace that rhythm and that momentum and... the run that the team were on and then decide to just switch it up, because I think you do get, you know, you take your foot of the gas, you do get complacent.
Mm. Well, yeah, and like I think G and Loopholes have been two of the players we've highlighted the last few weeks who've been superb in the double pivot. I think Hayes chose to break that up and just played Loopholes on her own in front of the defence, obviously knowing that Brighton weren't going to attack, so do you need two holding midfielders? But I think you see Chelsea lose control, like they lost control of the ball, they lost the ability to kind of wear Brighton down with passing moves. And so you talk about 70% possession, you talk about 30 shots, but I think if you watch this game, Chelsea didn't really look that in sync. I think when Pernille Harder came on, last 30 minutes, and Pernille Harder's shot off the inside of the post could easily have gone in, you know, and we'd be talking about a different game here. That was probably the best football Chelsea played all game. But until Kirby and Harder came on, and G, who looked really good and really started to move into space, you really felt like Brighton did a fantastic job of closing people down. I think Sam Kerr had a good game. She comes at this really well. I thought John Anderson had a really good game. But I think players like Loopholes, players like, you know, sad to say, Beth England, who was trying to mark Eileen Whelan for the first goal, these were the players who were expected to pick up the baton and run with it and not get complacent, and they're the ones that dropped off. Erin Cuthbert had an incredible delivery from set pieces today, but wasn't great in open play.
I will also say I don't think this win changes any perceptions of Brighton, because both their goals were, I think, no offence to Brighton fans and no offence to Hope Powell, quite fluky. And they don't
really
change.
The first
really
one's not as fluky.
Yeah, but a Chelsea side, a full strength back four or back five with the goalie, I think that doesn't go in. And I think Brighton's issues in front of goal remain regardless. It was a solid defensive performance from them, yes, but their issues in front of goal have not gone away because of one big win. But it certainly eases the pressure off Hope Howe, when perhaps a few weeks ago we were saying, is she going to be the next manager to go? But this has kind of thrown that whole thing up in the air.
Well, I think we've seen this a lot. I mean, I'm a huge Hope Howe fan, and I think sometimes when your back is up against the wall, that's when you see the best ever. You've called her a hard taskmaster, and I think there isn't a harder task than this. And that's why it's in games like these where you really see her frustrate Chelsea. And if you were watching the stream, listening to Emma Hayes on the sidelines, you just saw how much Brighton were able to get under their skin, and they deserve so much credit. And that is players, attacking players, Ellie Brazil, Inessa Kagman, who were so good today at defending, getting in, winning tackles, moving into the space that Chelsea players wanted to move into. And for me, player of the match was Koivisto, the Finnish left back, making her debut, going up against Beth England and Gura Wrighton, and kept them so quiet. She was everywhere today. And also, she was one of the few Brighton players who was just bombing forward and trying to make Chelsea players have to come back and not just kind of pile into the box, and she was just incredible today. What a debut from the Finn at left back. And that's maybe a good place to end on this, because I feel like we could talk about this game and what it means.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably do a whole podcast, and then that's our weekly push to say, listen to Frank Kirby's Fight Club, because they will be doing a breakdown of this very match.
Thank you, Flo. Yeah, go listen to Frank Kirby's Fight Club. It'll be a fun one. I always think Frank Kirby's Fight Club is a great podcast every day, every week, but when Chelsea are either fantastic or when they're really bad, that's when it's really a champagne podcast.
And I imagine, you know, this whole scenario has given other teams a lot of ideas. But what I want to liken this to, and I don't just want to make comparisons to the men's game, because, you know, I don't want to do that. But it feels like when Man City went to Cheltenham and Cheltenham just sort of lambasted them with an old school long throw that they couldn't deal with and sort of fell apart, and they couldn't deal with the onslaught of just quite basic football. Now, that probably sounds like a huge insult to Brighton, but I do think that Chelsea were almost trying to overcomplicate things, and Brighton going back to basics and just making some really difficult to handle set pieces.
Clearing the ball off your lines.
Yeah, I think, you mean, at the end, it was every man for himself. There was some comical defending, people hitting themselves in the face with the ball, but it got the ball out of the box at the end of the day.
I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about reffing. I didn't have enough of a view of it, and we really do need to move on. But when Inessa Kagman judo flipped...
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
Judo flipped Pernilla Harder in the 89th minute. And then the Lions person lifted the flag up for offside, and I couldn't see what was going on. I was almost certain Chelsea were going to have a penalty
there. You could have made a whole DVD out of the last 2 minutes.
But just to take you back on the, like, oh, Brighton, route one, long throw-ins. Chelsea only scored a goal off a corner in this.
Yeah,
Their best chances came from Cuthbert
corners.
That's
what I'm saying. They overcomplicated it.
Right, but I just think you're... Yeah, this wasn't, like, necessarily on the pitch, David versus Goliath, because Goliath didn't put passes together, in my opinion, especially in the final third. Anyway... What a classic. We could, like I said, we could talk about today. I live for this. Flo and I, without going off on that one, we grew up supporting a really rubbish men's football team. And for me, one of the biggest problems in all aspects of life is inequality. But even in football, inequality, you seeing the bad teams or the less good teams like Brighton get one over Chelsea, especially a Chelsea team that is so good and deserve all the respect and credit that they've got and breaking records. But seeing something like this just reminds you why we watch the game. And yeah, thank you, Hope Powell and Brighton and the WSL and the universe for giving me this, because I think maybe we'll talk about it when we wrap this episode up. But it feels like, you know, times are hard. And for me, a game like this reminds us why we watch every minute of every game. Anyway, Flo, immediately after this, Everton, almost just as legendary, got a 1-1 draw with Birmingham in a mid-table clash that has Carla Ward's team getting a pretty good away point at the lovely Walton Hall Park Stadium. It kind of looked like for a minute it was going to be Everton's day. Dan Turner scored a very nice curling free kick from the edge of the box, although I'm not a goalkeeper, so get back to me, goalkeepers, but I kind of thought the wall could have been set up a little bit better. And then Jamie Lee Napier on loan from Chelsea gets a very nice equaliser after Claudia Walker's penalty had been saved by backup keeper called Perla. And then Jamie Lee Napier comes in and stabs it in before anyone else. Flo, any other takeaways from this one? Good point for Carla Ward. Everton boss Willie Kirk will be pretty gutted, but at least he's got Govan back now. And Gabby George was on the bench for the first time in a year as well.
Yeah, I liked Craig Hadley's stat about that being Birmingham's first goal in 432 minutes, which...
I had a Birmingham stat as well.
Go for it. Hit me.
I had a week of jinxes. Anyone who follows me on Twitter will know that I was tweeting out... Everything I tweeted basically ended up the opposite happening. So I tweeted that Birmingham have picked up 0 points this season from when they go behind. And so this was Birmingham's first point of the season when the other team scores first.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. I also was thinking
today... They're very good at holding a lead, but they're not very good at getting it back.
I was thinking today this must be the first time since, like, October we've had a full set of WSL fixtures.
Yeah, it did feel crowded, didn't it?
There was a lot going on, but I loved it.
I had four screens on at one point. It was
pretty, it is kind of sensory overload. But, in terms of Birmingham... Good point against a good team, and now that I've heard that stat, even better considering the circumstances. Yeah. Jamie Lee Napier's first WSL goal, first goal for Birmingham. Good for her to get up and running, because I feel like she is a player with a lot of potential, but she hasn't really had the chance to show it. And I have seen Willie Kirk's post-match comments that Emma Sanders has been sharing. And also, can I just say, if you do go to any games, please share the post-match quotes from managers, because they don't include... A lot of club channels don't do videos. So Chelsea don't do
Brighton
videos.
Brighton share these... I know we've
Bristol
moved on,
do
but
do videos.
Brighton share these great videos of Hope Powell's press conferences with her...
I wish DIY
Zoom backgrounds.
So if you do, just share the quotes, because I know Tim does for Joe Montemurro, and it just, like, I always want to see what the reaction is, because the FA player and Women's Football Show barely include anything. So if you do, please share the quotes. But
we see you, we hear you, journalists, sharing the
Willie
quotes.
Willie Kirk said that he felt like he approached the game completely wrong, and he takes responsibility for that, and he'll move on, basically, is what he said. So I think Everton clearly disappointed, and perhaps this does signal the end of their top four finish, especially given what happened today. And I think Arsenal were probably clinging on to fourth, but I think trying to qualify for the Champions League will be tricky for them now. But that's the issue Everton are facing, isn't it? It's when they come up against quite organised, sort of resistant teams, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's a good word.
They do struggle to break them down at times, don't they? It's
yeah. And when I think they're where they like to play with their wingers, players like Rasso and Sorensen, I think if you drop back as much as a Carlo Ward team does, you've got no space to get in behind. So I think that's a great point. How you create passing moves to break them down. I think Jill Scott's added a good plug for them in midfield, but she hasn't necessarily got them moving the ball much quicker. So yeah, interesting to see Willie Kirk taking responsibility. You'd love to see it. Another big one, Flo, arguably the kind of marquee game of the weekend, although for me it was always Chelsea versus Brighton. Arsenal losing at home 2-1 to Man City. Ellen White rolled back the years with arguably one of the strikes of the weekend to get City 1-0 up before Caitlin Ford equalised with a lovely passing move, although some questionable high-line defence from Man City. And then Lauren Hemp thumped home a brilliant header, 2-1 in the 79th minute. Chloe Kelly with the assist for both goals, going top of the WSL assist charts in this one. Flo, City's title race is well on its way now, just 2 points behind Chelsea. And Arsenal, you know, same old story. Flat track bullies struggle in the big games.
Yeah, I can't remember if I said City were out of the title.
No, you said I think you said they were in.
Okay, I can't remember. But, I mean, they're certainly in now. I knew that I did have them to beat Arsenal just because of the fact Arsenal haven't played in so long and just endless injury situation there. And I don't think they've recovered from the Dubai gate. But yeah, City, I guess, are what
this was Chelsea, a Dubai derby,
Chelsea could wish they could be right now, which is, I mean, their goal to chance ratio, I haven't actually looked it up, but it must be pretty decent. Because they are because they've got so many goal scorers on the pitch, and this is, you know, the Chelsea are technically at this point too, but City don't seem to give in to as much rotation as Emma Hayes is currently. But because City have so many goal scorers on the pitch, they are just so kind of intimidating and so good at finishing chances. And it's interesting because I know before, I think we talked about how Ellen White was sort of becoming a poacher in her style, especially since she's getting a bit older. But boy, did she turn back the years today with that finish for the first goal. And you know, to be fair to Arsenal, they really got themselves in it and they faced an absolute barrage in the second half. Pretty much after they got their equaliser, City were so good and got opportunities in really key areas. You know, kept up the pressure, kept winning corners, kept putting the pressure on Arsenal's.
Robin Moy and Zinsberg were throwing their bodies around.
Yeah, patched together team. And then eventually the pressure paid off. I thought that Arsenal were going to cling on for a point, and I thought, well, this is going to be interesting because the teams behind the teams that lost shared the spoils today, and that hasn't necessarily helped either of their causes that much. But with that result now, with City finding a way to win, which is, you know, they're above and beyond finding a way at the moment because they're just so good at scoring goals, it really changes the narrative of this season. And it'll be interesting to see how Chelsea bounce back from this Wednesday. Arsenal has Jordan Nobbs, Jen Beattie, and Kim Little out today with injuries they sustained in training. They have to be back Wednesday to have any chance of getting a result against Chelsea, I think. Even though Chelsea are wounded right now, I think Arsenal are going to need a lot to compete because I think Chelsea will just overrun that Arsenal midfield, which is just looking so light at the moment.
Flo, I've got two questions for you. They're both a bit clickbaity, but forgive me. We are family. Leah Williamson, does she leave Arsenal if they don't finish in the top three? Is my first question. A lot has been written this week about that. So I just want your take on that. She's taking a sip of water, listener. She's taking her time.
Oh, I thought you were asking me both questions at once.
No, I'll give you one.
Oh,
and then
okay.
One.
It's looking like that, isn't it? I mean, I imagine she would definitely want to be playing Champions League football, although I don't quite yet know what, without, I know there's going to be group stages being brought in now with the Champions League, and I think that will add and elevate the status of the competition a bit, because although it's huge, because of the dominance of some teams and because of the format, it hasn't quite got that, you know, je ne sais quoi right now. It doesn't have that, that it doesn't feel so competitive, because there's so, because the gap is quite big in the qualifiers and the first few rounds. And without the group, it's hard to build a storyline. I think it's really hard for fans to get engaged with it as well, when there's such a vast gap between, like, when did we have the first knockout rounds? Like November?
Yeah, that sounds about October, maybe.
Yeah, and now, you know, we're waiting.
Well, there was a round before that, actually. Yeah, it just didn't involve WSL teams.
Yeah, that was
that might have been September, October.
Yeah, but now we're, before we get to the next stage, like, it's February right now. So yeah. I think that is, without having the group stage, it's hard to build momentum and build status with that competition, but it's still obviously the biggest women's football domestic, like, competition club-wise. So I think there'll still be a desire for her to be in that. Arsenal fan, born and bred, huge connection to the club. I don't know. I think it's going to be a tough one.
That sigh, Flo. Well, look, I'll give you question two, and listeners, get back to us on what you think about the future of Leah Williamson. Obviously, proper greener.
I think there's probably actually more of a chance of Miedema moving than Williamson.
Mm. Okay. Second question was just Chloe Kelly. In terms of right wingers / midfielders, but she's more of a winger, so we'll kind of put her in her own category. In terms of wingers, either flank, how good is she? Where does she rank in the WSL?
Oh.
Right now.
Top three.
Can you name the other two off the top of your head, or do you want a few days and we'll get back to you on that?
Oh, I mean, have you got like an official rankings? Or you
I'm asking for Flo Lloyd Hughes's official rankings.
Lauren James on her day.
Ooh, curveball.
But we haven't quite...
Kind of not an official winger, though.
Well, Lauren, I know, James, but she always plays
kind of a
down,
roaming.
She always
she's
plays
like a
down
roaming
the,
forward.
Around the left or right, really, at the moment. Yeah. She doesn't ever really come on and just play down the middle.
Because I'd say Tobin Heath is probably better than her right now.
Chloe Kelly has had moments where she's played down the middle this season, albeit very briefly. But I think she's been tried in... you know, right and left, and probably a tiny bit down the middle. But they've now found that spot for her that is so good. Tobin Heath, but like Lauren James, I don't think we've quite seen enough of her.
Right, you're kind of going off reputation.
Yeah, certainly. Guro,
she's right up
Guro
there.
Wrighton. When she's,
not today.
When she's allowed to play.
She was silenced by Koivisto.
When
but,
she's allowed to play. Guro Wright, last season's Guro Wrighton.
2019, 2020, Guro Wrighton. Yeah. And then 2021, Chloe Kelly.
Who else? I mean, who do you think? Do you think Chloe Kelly's the best? Chloe Kelly's probably the best, actually, right now.
She's right up there right now.
I don't know what I'm thinking in terms of
I definitely
would
probably still put Heath number one. Even in the glimpses we've seen, I just think she's a class act. But yeah, I kind of feel like after the last few games, you really feel like Chloe Kelly's number two. I mean, Lauren Hemp might even be number three. You know, that's what's crazy about City, like you were saying. Anyway, moving on to the final game of the weekend, West Ham back in snowy Dagenham. Flo, this was a beautiful game to watch if anyone was out there watching it. As the snow fell down in a kind of snow globe Dagenham in the Matt Beard derby. West Ham 1-1 at home to Bristol City. Flo, the narrative looked drawn up for this one to be tears at the end of a love affair for maternity Matt Beard getting one over his old club when Molly Pike, on loan from Everton, scored another chaos corner kick. That was kind of the flavour of the day, wasn't it? We had the three in the Brighton-Chelsea game, the one in the Reading game, and there was another poorly kept out corner from Molly Pike for Bristol City, giving them the lead 1-0. And then what can only be said to be a kind of... bully ball of Emily Van Egmond and Svitkova combo got the ball in the back of the net in the second half to make it 1-1. They just bullied Jazz Matthews. I feel it was one of those, if you're at the game, Flo, you hear that person about four rows behind you shout, boot it out. And you would just, Bristol should have cleared their lines. And Emily Van Egmond smelt blood and just knocked the ball out of Jazz Matthews' feet, and Svitkova kind of gets a toe on it. But yeah, it was a funny old game this. Really scrappy, really hard to get players to get a foot on the ball because of all the snow. It was beautiful. Seeing players like Emily Salmon run in the snow, and you could see this little these pops of white snow like shoot off their feet. It was honestly like a painting, or like, you know, some sort of high art movie. But the quality of football was very low from both teams, and I think in a way both managers will be very pleased with a point, because if West Ham had lost this, they were well and truly in this relegation battle. You know, Svitkova's goal today is Ollie Harder's first goal as a manager in the WSL. So West Ham have struggled for form, they struggled for goals, and Bristol with the cup win midweek and the huge win over Brighton, you just felt like this was going to be Bristol City's day. Ebony Salmon did hit the post in the first half right after they went 1-0 up, and so maybe if that goes 2-0, it's game over. But to be fair to West Ham, they showed a bit of character. Emily Van Egmond especially, as always, kind of is quite good at rolling up her sleeves. And I don't think they were very good today, West Ham, but they did enough.
Yeah, I was surprised, because as soon as Bristol City went 1-0 up, I thought it was just going to be a continuation of, yeah, the Matt Beard maternity bounce. So credit to, and also at that point, West Ham went bottom of the table as it stood at that point.
Right, because they're 2 points ahead.
So
yeah.
In my head, I was like, shit.
You could see it on the faces of the West Ham players. Like, they did look quite worried.
Well, in my head, I was thinking, shit, we could have a new manager sacked already within the space of just being here a couple of months, because the West Ham can't get relegated with the money that the Sullivan family put into this project. They have high hopes, and to go from a cup final to this point to near bottom of the table in that space of time is worrying. And I think no matter what Harder's intentions are and his goals are and his style of football, it does seem strange to me to move on some of the club's biggest signings that they've invested quite a lot of money in. I think that's a red flag. So I was like going to a lot of sort of conclusions in my head already based on
You're going
on
to
that.
Dark places. Yeah. Very, yeah. Very dark places. I mean, I totally agree. I do think you have to check yourself a little bit, because like you say about the players, this is not the same West Ham team that started the season. No Rachel Daly, no Lehmann, no Cho. Mackenzie Arnold in goal is having an absolute nightmare.
Well, I throw that back to you. Do you think they're playing worse or better than that team, which was already in a bit of a mess?
I think they're playing worse on the ball, for sure. I think they're playing worse football. You could maybe give them a little bit of credit because Harder wants to play a pressing game. But obviously trying to play a pressing game against Bristol City doesn't really work, because they drop so deep and kick the ball out. So I think Harder is trying to put his identity on the team, and it's not really working yet. But maybe when we see West Ham play Everton, I'm just picking that team out because they like to have the ball, maybe that's going to be a matchup that will suit Ollie Harder's style of football. Right now, I would argue that both Matt Beard's West Ham and Billy Stewart's West Ham were playing better football on the ball than Ollie Harder's. But Matt Beard's West Ham like to make a lot of mistakes, and Mackenzie Arnold is definitely in goal for West Ham, is making a lot of mistakes right now. But I've said this a few times, Grace Fisk is actually having a bit of a second season upturn in form under Ollie Harder, and she looks really settled in this three. I think sometimes you see this with defenders that really like the ball at their feet. Once you put five defenders at the back, they look a lot better. So Grace Fisk is really coming into her own, but I think you're seeing the midfield for West Ham get a bit lost. And Kenza Dali, we talked about it, we thought she would leave in January. She's sitting on the bench and not getting a game under Harder, doesn't seem to fancy her, but she is a good player and they could do with some creativity. But yeah, right now I would argue West Ham are playing the worst, maybe before Brighton today, we're playing the worst football in the WSL, and maybe they can have a very, very big couple of weeks ahead to try and fend off a Bristol team that just seemed really, really excited and just playing for the manager. And yeah, big shout out to Matt Beard for getting those two loans in. Molly Pike, who got the goal, kind of a goal assist own goal today. And Keela Skeels, who got the winner to put Bristol City into the Conti Cup final, which we didn't cover because we were taking a bit of a sort of a breather this week, Flo. We're going to come back to you with the Wednesday episodes, listeners. But, you know, sometimes it's better to just take a breath.
Yeah, and I just want to go back to the West Ham situation. Because
let's go back to it.
I think if you look at it this way, Bristol City are, you know, the only way is up right now for them, because they've got so much momentum. And they, even though at times they're not playing great football, you can't put a price on feeling good. feeling confident and believing in yourself. And that is one of Matt Beard's biggest qualities, is he's a man manager, and he is quite an emotional guy that makes strong bonds with his players. Now, that is fantastic when things are going well, and that's why you're seeing that on with the results that Bristol City are getting. It's not good when things start to go wrong, which is how it unraveled at West Ham, because of that bond, because of that emotion, because of the what you've created. You know, things get tough quite quickly. Now, with the situation West Ham are in, they are going to be on the bottom of this table quite quickly based on how they're playing right now. And I don't think this is the end of thinking that Harder might get sacked before he's even really begun his tenure as head coach there. Who they would bring in, I have no idea. But I think it just seems strange from an investment point of view that they would let someone come in and shift their biggest assets. I mean, I know he's the manager, but it's just surprising. And I think when Matt Beard came on Women's Football Weekly last week, he sort of hinted at the situation there, and I think, you know, an issue in terms of power dynamic with there not being a sort of a director of football, because his previous director of football is now at Leicester, and they're still very good friends, and they had a great relationship. And then when he left, I don't know if they currently have a director of football, but I think the power dynamic kind of went all wrong and the communication went all wrong. So I don't know if they've gone too far the other way and now have like given Ollie Harder control of everything, or Jack Sullivan is now having a lot of power. But it seems weird that he would want to be shifting some players that he's spent a lot of money on. So I just don't really understand what's going on there, but it doesn't seem to be going away with the change that they made. And to see that not impacting results is very worrying when those around you, you know, Villa's managerial change looks to have made some sort of difference. I don't necessarily
that,
think...
That, and I mean, maybe Iwabuchi arriving is more the bigger factor.
I think Iwabuchi's made a huge difference. And I think they're going to rely on her a lot to keep themselves out of this. But I think West Ham are going to get relegated.
Big shouts. I didn't even have to... Usually I try and tee you up, Flo. Just try and get my sister to just... I try and eke the big takes out of her. Sometimes she just goes off on her own and drops them. Quickly dipping into the FA Women's Championship. Big weekend for them. Lots of games. One was postponed. London City Lionesses, who are in really, really good form, against second team Durham, didn't manage to make kickoff. Leicester had the week off, top of the table Leicester. But we did have huge win away for Chef U, putting four past London Bees, winning 4-2. Great goal by Sweetman Kirk. I recommend you checking out on the highlights, and a 90th minute goal from Katie Wilkinson, who just cannot stop scoring. We've said it before, Sheffield United probably won't go up, but they're a really great team and seem to be really well run. So maybe we'll keep an eye on them next season. Blackburn 2, Palace 2. Lots of late goals in this one. Palace looked like they'd won it 2-1, 87th minute goal from Johnson, but then Blackburn scored an equaliser in the 90th minute. Lots of drama there in the kind of mid-table FA Women's Championship. The Coventry United Lewis game was on the FA Player, which filled in for the London City Lionesses game being cancelled. Always, I feel like I watch Lewis almost every week. They were really, really good in this one, much the better team. Coventry were pretty poor. They're 9 games without a win, now 10 games without a win. Lewis won 1-0. Really late goal by Timms to give them the winner. Lewis were on top for a lot of this game, and actually I kind of had one of those gut feelings you sometimes have in football where I thought Coventry were going to win the game because Lewis missed so many chances, and sometimes if you miss chances, it comes back to bite you. And Tatiana Saunders in goal for Coventry was fantastic today. I wondered if Georgia Stevens, Flo, great player for Coventry, came off in the 54th minute. It's kind of hard to tell on these streams sometimes. You don't know if they're injured or anything, but she was Coventry's best player by a mile. And at 0-0, you just think, why are you taking her off? So that was kind of my only other kind of take from the game. But Lewis looked really good. And then, Flo, I was going to tee you up on this one. Charlton drawing 2-2 at home to Liverpool. You know, Shauna Vassell gets the opener. Charlton, who are really struggling this year in the FA Women's Championship, look like they're about to get something. But then kind of Rachel Furness inspires a bit of a response from Liverpool. And it's been a bit of a chaotic week up there.
Yeah, I also want to shout out, after my grounds person chat a few weeks ago, I want to shout out the staff at Bromley who according to Charlton Athletic, women worked tirelessly to ensure the game today could go ahead.
There was a lot of snow.
There was a lot of snow. And shout out to the people that are going above and beyond to make women's football happen, because I
and
had
it was
a
great game.
Whine.
They were awarded.
I had a bit of a moan about it. And I know a lot of pitches that women's football has played on doesn't have undersoil heating. And, you know, this stuff is affecting the championship in the men's game too, with waterlogged pitches and stuff. So it's not, but you know, I appreciate those who are doing the work to make sure these games can happen and not feeling like it's just something that doesn't matter.
Well, and just to give context to that, Charlton, who got the draw thanks to the wonderful groundspeople work, getting the 2-2, they were off the bottom of the table and out of the relegation places with that point. So really important that game went ahead.
Yeah, and in terms of Liverpool, I am impressed that they managed to claw back a point, because at 1-0 down to bottom placed Charlton, well, bottom at that point, and given everything that's gone on there with not only Vicky Jepson, but this week it being revealed that Renzola Babajide had handed in a transfer request in January, was refused a move despite some loan offers coming in, and she hasn't been training with the team, and she wasn't in the squad today, so that issue is still ongoing. It's just such a mess over there, and I just don't necessarily see a way out with it without it causing a lot of damage to players and people, which I think is sad, and it's probably something that could have been avoided a couple of years ago, and you just don't want to see people who've given a lot of time and love to a club and its family treated badly, and I think that's what I fear with Vicky Jepson. So good to see Liverpool showing a bit of fight today, and hopefully next season with a new manager, the right manager, and with a good group of players, they can make something happen and they get some support from the club.
It's going to be one of the biggest things to watch this off-season. I mean, players as with as vast quality as Renzola Babajide, for one, is going to be an interesting
Rachel
transfer
Furness,
to watch.
I'm like, why? Renzola Babajide, Rachel Furness, what are they doing in the championship? Like, no offense to the championship, but they are WSL players. And I was very surprised that Babajide signed a new contract in June, because, I mean, most people thought she was going to be playing in the WSL, and it's the equivalent, you know, Bristol getting relegated and Ebony Sabin signing a new contract to stay in the championship. Yeah. Like, you just feel like when someone's outgrown that division or you know, they...
Club.
That club, yeah, you know, it's time to move on. So that loyalty that she showed, I suppose, isn't necessarily being replicated.
So yeah, Liverpool are 10.
Was the word I should have said.
Liverpool sit 10 points off the top and the one promotion place in the league after that 2-2 draw. Clifford's 90th minute equaliser for Charlton. Such a big result there for the Addicts. And yeah, that leaves Coventry now bottom, Charlton second bottom, London Bees 1 point ahead in third bottom. Lewis are up to sixth with another win. Good old binary Lewis, 0-0-1, 0-0-0-1, getting it done with the 1-0 win. Flo, that's about it for the weekend, unless you've got any other business you want to chuck in there. I wanted to give a shout out to Asselani in the Spanish Women's League, getting for Real Madrid, scored a 3-minute hat trick. Do you see this, Flo?
I did, and I think it's like one of the fastest hat tricks, men's or women's, of all time.
Football, wherever it's been played, on whatever planet, it's one of the fastest hat tricks of all time. Yeah, go give Asselani some love. Watch that on the Real Madrid Twitter. Second goal in particular, is on the subject of planets, is an incredible lob over the keeper, which I'm pretty sure leaves the orbit of the planet Earth before coming back down over the keeper's head and nestling in the bottom of the net. Fantastic, audacious lob from the Swede, who I quite like to see her in the WSL one day, Asselani. She was fantastic at the 2019 World Cup as a kind of impact sub for Sweden. Yeah, Flo, anything else before we get out of here?
That's it, I think.
Cool. Thanks for sticking with us. This is your Sunday summary show. We'll be back with more midweek stuff. As I said, we were catching our breath and taking a bit of a kind of mental health break, getting some space. And I suggest you do the same if you need it, listener. And thanks so much for reaching out. All the jokes online, all the nice things you say. And we'll see you very soon.